Hi, I'm Philip Anthony Albertelli, and this is The Week in Doubt, a podcast for atheists, agnostics, and whoever. And this is episode 86. Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/theweekindoubt. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. I know I probably sound a little funny, well, more so than usual. I've got some kind of nasty cold, but I'm going to try my best to soldier on. Before I get to the shoutouts, I want to address some possible tech issues with the show. Recently, I've been having trouble getting episodes to play using the embedded audio player on the Podbean site. Strangely enough, only when using Safari, though. When I try using Firefox, the episodes play fine. I've also noticed that when I try to stream or download episodes of the show using an iOS device, like an iPad or iPhone, I get a "this episode is temporarily unavailable" message. At first I thought it must be Podbean. I sent them a few emails and they assured me everything seems all right on their end. I even enlisted the help of friend of the show and podcaster extraordinaire Chris Weber of C-Web Sunday School fame, and he too said everything was working fine for him. So I'm not sure what's going on. Maybe it's just me starting to feel like I'm in a Kafka story. Hope I don't wake up tomorrow and find I've turned into a giant cockroach wearing a pair of jammies. That would be weird. I think it was Crocoduck, a listener who I've mentioned before, who told me he was having trouble downloading episodes, but found success using an app or service called Juice. I'm not familiar. Maybe it's some kind of podcatcher. I've noticed that if you go into the actual iTunes store instead of using the iOS podcast app, you're able to get the episodes to play that way, or at least I was. I think part of it could be Apple's podcast app. I've heard others complaining about it being a little glitchy in general. But anyway, I'm not sure if any of you out there are having trouble accessing episodes of the show. If so, I apologize, and hopefully things get worked out soon. If you are having trouble, please get in touch with me through Twitter or the Week in Doubt Facebook page and let me know. Any information may prove helpful in terms of getting things resolved. And maybe also I'll start being more timely with my releasing of the YouTube versions of the show, so that way even if people are experiencing technical issues with the podcast, they can still have a way to access the newest episodes. All right, now on to the shoutouts. Well, once again, I'd like to thank Crocoduck for quickly giving me feedback concerning tech issues with the podcast. I'd like to thank the legendary C-Web for his aforementioned help. I'd like to thank Buzzwigs for all his recent activity on the FB page. He posted a great link that I just watched last night. It was a link to a live episode of Citizen Radio, and I have to admit I had previously never even heard of Citizen Radio, but I loved it. Might have been the best clip I've seen in a while. The hosts were both really funny, and they had some guests on, all who I happen to be fans of. Regina Spektor was there and actually performed a couple of songs, and then they interviewed Sarah Silverman and journalist Matt Taibbi. They both told some funny stories. Sarah Silverman told a story about stabbing Al Franken in the head with a pencil, and Matt Taibbi told a story of how, as part of the press corps during the John Kerry campaign, he dropped acid, put on a Viking costume, and interviewed some kind of anti-drug official. It was pretty awesome. I definitely plan on checking out some more episodes of Citizen Radio. As promised, I also finally checked out the FFRF, Freedom From Religion Foundation, links Buzzwigs posted. I don't think they necessarily changed my mind regarding atheist billboards, but I did find myself agreeing with a lot of what the host had to say. I believe the name of the show was Free Thought Radio, and it was affiliated with the aforementioned FFRF. I also agree that even if you don't necessarily approve of atheist billboards, if you find them to be in bad taste or if they offend your particular religious sensibilities, you still shouldn't vandalize or deface them. The host of Free Thought Radio had mentioned a couple of cases where people had vandalized atheist billboards. In case you're new to the show or have missed the last couple of episodes, the reason why I'm talking about all of this is because I've recently mentioned on the show how, even though I'm a non-believer, I do sometimes find atheist billboards to be a little distasteful or to be something akin to internet trolling. I have similar attitudes towards some of PETA's billboards. I'm an animal lover, and I think we should do whatever we can to combat animal cruelty, but I think some of PETA's tactics end up offending people or driving them away instead of winning hearts and minds. I think one time PETA had a billboard that juxtaposed images of concentration camp victims with images of dead pigs or something like that. And I kind of get the analogy that pigs like people are living beings with a right to live, and that the way we ceaselessly kill them en masse could perhaps be looked at as a kind of Holocaust. But obviously it goes without saying people have very strong feelings about the Holocaust, and people are very easily offended by Holocaust imagery they view as being exploitive. So maybe if PETA had instead used some heart-wrenching image of a mother pig trying to rouse the body of a lifeless piglet from a slaughterhouse floor, and yes, unfortunately, such images do exist, maybe something like that would tug more at people's heartstrings and move them in a compassionate direction rather than pissing people off by utilizing inflammatory historical or religious imagery that could be deemed as being exploitive or disrespectful. I should add that I have no problem at all with PETA's naked lady stuff, the semi-erotic ads and topless protesters. But hey, what can I say? I think that's probably something like my attitude as an atheist. Rather than antagonistically shoving my unbelief in other people's faces, I like to try to reel people in using logic and reason, explain to them politely and thoughtfully why I doubt the existence of a creator and an afterlife. And maybe I'm a bit of a hypocrite, or there's some amount of dissonance in my thinking, because two of my favorite non-believers and personal intellectual heroes of mine are Richard Dawkins and the late Christopher Hitchens, and they can certainly be provocative at times with books bearing titles like The God Delusion and God Is Not Great, glaring out from bookstore displays and windows. I guess at least I'm not afraid to shine a light on my own hypocrisy or inconsistency, though. But all right. Oh, there was something else I wanted to mention regarding buzzwigs. If you remember last week's episode, I kind of waxed philosophical yet again on why people are attracted to shiny things and why we put worth on things like gold. I mentioned the theory that we may be evolutionarily wired to be attracted to such things because prehistoric man may have had a life-saving attraction to the shimmering of light on water, which helped him find the good old H2O we all need to live. Just the theory I heard on the History Channel, take it for what it's worth. But anyway, buzzwigs pointed out on the Facebook page that there may be other reasons we value gold, such as its rarity, malleability, its resistance to rust, etc. Excellent point. So thanks to buzzwigs for getting involved with the conversation and contributing to the show. He also mentioned Tutankhamun's tomb because of all the gold it contained, and that made me think of the heretical Pharaoh Akhenaten, who may or may not have been Tut's father, may or may not have been physically deformed, and was quite possibly the inventor of monotheism, which is what made him so controversial, because as you know, the ancient Egyptians were polytheists with a rich and varied pantheon of gods. But that's fodder for another episode. I think now I'll move on to a news story. If you keep up with political news, then you've probably heard the words Hobby Lobby repeated over and over again, nigh to the point of madness this past week. Well, Hobby Lobby is the name of a chain of arts and crafts stores. The reason they're in the spotlight is that the owners are conservative Christians who claim to be against certain forms of contraception on moral and religious grounds. Remember how Mitt Romney claimed that companies are people? Well, now there's an argument on whether or not corporations are entitled to religious rights like an individual, which may make it possible for a company to say it violates their religious beliefs to offer their employees contraception as part of an insurance package. A lot of people have pointed out that there's a legitimate slippery slope argument to be made. If you can deny employees contraception coverage on religious grounds, what happens if your boss is, say, for instance, a Christian scientist who doesn't believe in medicine at all? Scary stuff. I was just looking for an article to quote regarding the Hobby Lobby story, and I just stumbled across another controversy the chain store was involved in. It seems that back in October, they made the news because the owner was seemingly refusing to carry Hanukkah and Passover items, supposedly because of his Christian faith. Which is stupid, since, as I always say, Judaism is the mother religion of Christianity. But apparently, he walked back a bit and offered an apology and said Hobby Lobby would carry Jewish holiday items in areas where there's a large Jewish population. This guy seems to be a real piece of work, as they say, or a piece of something. But anyway, here's a HuffPost article about the recent controversy. I'll read a bit of it. The U.S. Supreme Court announced on Tuesday that it will take up the question of whether a for-profit company can refuse to cover contraception for its employees because of religious objections. Dozens of companies have sued the Obama administration over a rule in the Affordable Care Act, requiring most employers, with the exception of churches and religious nonprofits, to cover the full range of contraceptives in their health insurance plans. The Supreme Court will hear the most high-profile case filed by the Christian-owned craft supply chain Hobby Lobby, as well as Conestoga, Wood Specialties Corp. versus Sibelius, a case filed by a Pennsylvania-based furniture company owner, owned by a family of Mennonites. The cases will be heard together, likely in March 2014, with a decision expected in June. Hobby Lobby's attorney argued that the provision forces it to pay for the methods of contraception to which the owners morally object, the Plan B morning after pill, an emergency contraceptive called Ella, and two different kinds of intrauterine devices, IUDs, that may sometimes work by preventing a fertilized egg from implanting into the uterus. Those who believe that life begins at fertilization consider those forms of birth control to be akin to abortion. There's something so creepy about an employer trying to get involved in someone's health care, something very big brotherish about it. Maybe we need a system where we either don't get health care from our employers at all, or at least a system that makes what's in a health care package none of the employer's business. Well, food for thought as always, I guess. And that being said, this has been another episode of The Week in Doubt. You can like the show on Facebook. You can start a conversation or leave a message on Facebook. You can follow the show on Twitter. You can watch the video uploads on the Week in Doubt YouTube channel. You can rate or subscribe to the show through iTunes or Podbean. And this is the part where I feel like a hobo holding out a styrofoam paper cup. If you want, you can go to the Podbean Week in Doubt page and donate 99 cents via the PayPal widget to help with the maintenance costs of the show. All right. Thank you very much.